podcast for all your running needs.
Ned, he was a terminally happy guy. And Ned, he ate a moldy pumpkin pie. And Ned, he thought that he just couldn't die. And Ned, he laughed so hard it made me cry.
Hey Chris, this is Matt, aka the Crazy Runner. Just calling in to leave you an intro for your show. Hello everybody, and welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast. The podcast for runners, wannabe runners, and mid-packers of all shapes and sizes who just want to strap on their favorite pair of shoes and get out there. This is not Chris, your host. This is Matt, aka the Crazy Runner. I'm the guest announcer this week. When you're done listening to the Run, Run, Live podcast, come visit me at www.thecrazyrunner.com, where I too host my own podcast. Here, you can go out on a run with me as I train for my first ever marathon this January at Walt Disney World. So, wherever and whenever this episode finds you, I hope you're doing great, and I hope you're getting your run in today. I know I'm getting my run in. So, you ready to have some fun? Come on then, let's go for a run.
The phenomena you're about to witness could well revolutionize your way of thinking. We are presenting startling facts and evidence that take up where other explanations leave off. Some of these revelations may very well go against things you have been taught and perhaps believed all your life. Prepare yourself for the evidence which will follow.
Hey, this is Chris, and I'm down in Atlantic City unpacking. Ah, this has got to be the nastiest hotel room I have stayed in. This is in the top five, anyhow. It's just nasty. It's, if I don't catch bed bugs, I'll be surprised. It's one of those, the door opens out into the parking lot kind of hotels. But that is a Ramada Inn, you know, who knew? I thought Ramada Inn sounded like a reasonable hotel, but I guess not. So, yeah, go run a marathon tomorrow. Gonna mix up some concoctions here. Just went shopping at the supermarket, so I can get some rest. Eat up a little bit, lay my stuff out, and get going. Talk to you some more.
Hello and welcome to episode 96 of the Run, Run, Live podcast. And this is Chris, your warm and loving host. I'm here to offer you a big old cup of hot, steamy, running comfort on these cold fall nights. Except for you folks who live in the other hemisphere, I guess I'd be offering you a hot, steamy mug of sunscreen, maybe? Don't know. I just got back from a run in the woods with Buddy, and it felt fantastic. I was flying. I felt positively weightless. I was eating up those leaf-covered hills with long, hungry strides, which surprised the heck out of me because I just ran the Atlantic City Marathon on Sunday, and today's Tuesday, so less than 2 days ago. So I snuck out of work early today so I could get out on the trail with Buddy while old Mr. Soul was still hanging about, and it didn't quite work. I went out about 4, you know, between 4 and 4:10, and I couldn't see a thing just now finishing up. And I was basically running using the Braille method. I kept having to call the dog so I'd know where the trail was, which is difficult on the trail, especially when the leaf cover's down. And when you're going fast, you just have no idea what you're stepping on. And I wheeled around a corner right at the end, and I clipped a log with my shin. And I knew it was there, because I run these trails all the time, but I misjudged it in the dark. It's a big oak limb from one of the windstorms, and it has this jagged edge that sticks out into the trail, and I just rent a big gash in my leg. So, big bloody gash. I'll live. I'm indestructible. That's what chins are for. And I just put a picture up on Facebook and Twitter for you, if you want to see. Look up CYKT Russell. That's me. Speaking of which, someone also posted this week a high school picture of me on Facebook. So if you want to see the long-haired, 130-pound version of Mad Dog, it's out on Facebook. So yeah, baby, how's everybody doing? Getting ready to hibernate for the holidays? Put on a few pounds? Let your training lax and wane? Sounds wordplay. So today, we got a super show for you. I have some audio from my trip down to Atlantic City to run the marathon there. I picked up a little bit of cell phone interference on some of these clips, so I'll try to clean it up. But if you hear a buzz, forgive me. I had a strong race. I still didn't pick up my qualifier. I came in at a 3:32, but I ran the whole thing strong with a steady state strategy, and I really showed some good stick-to-itiveness, a little bit of courage in the high miles, and it felt very cathartic for me, and it got that marathon bug out of my system for this fall. So I also interviewed Sage Roundtree today, who's a highly, highly qualified yoga practitioner, as well as a nice lady, as well as a very good endurance athlete herself. And do you think her parents knew she was going into yoga when they decided to name her Sage Roundtree? I think so. So I'm probably going to intersperse some music clips from my iPod just to give you an idea of what my emotional level is like on race day and what's going through my mind. And I really love racing because I can turn my demons loose. You know, I can let them off the leash, so to speak. So what's next for me? I don't know. But whatever it is, you can be sure it'll be freaking awesome. So please keep the emails and the comments coming. Love to meet you all and race with you. Don't you know? On with the show. Never fell in love till I fell in love with you. Not all the good time was a heck of a time of year. They won't get the feeling wrong, you're right, then the music's gonna allow for when the music hits, I feel no pain at all.
Alright, mixing this up. So I get to listen to about, the sound you hear is the water going in. I get to listen to about 8 podcasts, though, coming down here. Even the long ones. Even the long ones. I'm going to wear my iPod tomorrow, too. I'm going to race with my iPod because there ain't going to be anybody else around to talk to. It's just going to be me and my legs and my body. So I'm going to listen to the Tripwire podcast, which is a new music podcast. It's got all that mellow techno-type music that Steve Chopper likes to listen to, which I don't particularly like, but it's nice and mellow. It'll keep me focused. So there we go. I got my Gatorade mixed up from powder. A lot of times I'll use powder because with powder you can regulate the strength. I mean, you can regulate the strength of the Gatorade by just mixing water with the Gatorade, too. But I don't always, depending on the temperature, I don't always want full-strength Gatorade. If it's really cold, I'll, like tomorrow it's going to be cool enough that I'll go with fairly full strength. But most of the time I'm going with half strength, so it doesn't give me a rumbly in the tumbly. Yeah, so that's pretty good. That'll work. What a week. So I had five appointments I had applied to this week. I was out Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. I was in New Jersey, Detroit, Milwaukee, Appleton, Cleveland, Canton, Charlotte, and Boston. And I woke up, I started getting that, everybody's got the same cold, and I don't know whether it's some sort of mild version of the H1N1, but you basically get a pounding, horrible headache and a bit of a fever and a real loss in energy. I started like last Friday, like 7 days ago, I started having this cold. And then it peaked on like Tuesday. And Wednesday, I had to get up Wednesday, like 3 o'clock in the morning, go into the airport. And I had the chills, you know, and the sweats. And I'm an idiot, because I went to work anyhow. I went and got in an airplane and flew out to Milwaukee for a meeting. But I was useless, I mean, because I was brain dead from this fever. And it never manifested into, like, a runny nose or had a little bit of a cough, a little bit of a runny nose, but just a fever, no sore throat, just a fever and malaise and chills and sweats and just no energy. So I didn't run much at all this week, but that's okay because I figured I probably overtrained for the last one, and I got it in me. So I'll be interested to see whether that cold, whether it took anything out of me. A lot of times at the back end of a flu, it takes you a couple of weeks to get your energy back. But we'll see how that works because I really haven't had a run all that much this week. But the other thing was it suppressed my appetite, so I haven't eaten a lot either. I don't look real good. I look pretty pale. But we'll give it our college try tomorrow. I've already signed up for the race. I was hoping to get a qualifier for 2011. I'll have to sign up on time this year because I get the notice that Boston has closed. It's sold out. You know what that means? That means Chris didn't get his entry in on time. And that's an interesting conversation because you say, Chris, surely with all the people you know in the local Massachusetts running world, you get yourself a number. And yeah, you know, I probably could. But that, yeah, I don't really care. I mean, I do care. I'd love to run, but it's not necessary in the sense that I've run 11 Boston Marathons, and I've really had a good run with those. So let somebody else have some fun for a while. Let somebody else enjoy my hometown race. I've got my eyes on a 50K that they run on the same day out in Western Mass. And we'll go do that. We'll do some other adventure. So it's really not that big a deal for me. I mean, if somebody called me and offered me a number, would I take it? I don't know. I'd have to think real hard on that because, you know, in the one sense, I earned it. I mean, I'm qualified. But in the other sense, I'll be there again. You know, it's not like that's the last Boston I'm ever going to run. So it's interesting. I have a different perspective because, you know, the starting line's 20 miles from my house, if that, and it's more of a hometown race for me. So on the one hand, I'm saying, well, you know, this is my race. You guys aren't going to let me run my race that I qualified for fair and square. And all these foreigners are kind of coming in and run my race. But, you know, then you say, well, good for them, right? Good for them. Everybody had great times this fall. Everybody qualified. Good for them. So I'll find something else to do. But it's interesting because it sort of changed my plans, or I'll have to change my plans midstream and see how that affects my training. But yeah, so I'm going to race tomorrow. I got to eat something now. I haven't eaten for a while. I didn't pack enough food. Didn't think I was going to be on the road that long. New Jersey cleaned me out of all my change, too. I had about $5 worth of change in the car. They went right through that. New Jersey. God, this place is like a freaking war zone. I'm going to pile stuff in front of the door tonight. I don't know, maybe I should not do that, though, because I might have to get out of here fast. I might get overrun by rodents or something. Jeez, all right, I got to lay out my stuff. Later.
And now for our featured interview.
Sage Rountree, welcome to the Run, Run, Live podcast. And you're you've got an excellent combination of skills, which is yoga and running and biking and swimming. And that's and you're a practitioner as well, a triathlete and a marathoner and a good one, which adds to your credibility because I know a lot of people talk the yoga and talk the running that don't actually do it, and I tend to doubt that they know what they're talking about. Got a couple of books out, The Athlete's Guide to Yoga, a pocket guide, Athlete's Pocket Guide to Yoga. And it seems like you've done a good job of cutting through the mist that surrounds yoga and why it's important to runners and triathletes. And you're a certified coach or certified, coach, right, for USA Triathlon, USA Cycling, and the Road Runners Clubs of America. And so tell me who you are and what you do in 100 words or less.
Well, the first thing that I tell people when I am standing in front of them to teach them is that Sage Rountree really is my real name. I know it sounds like a yoga handle, and it sounds incredible, but it is my real name. I know it's pretty evocative, but I got Sage from my parents and Rountree from my husband. That's probably taking up my 100 words, but Chris, you hit most of it. I run, I race in triathlons, I teach yoga at workshops across the country, and I coach. I coach about a dozen athletes in multi-sport running and ultra running.
So you're just coming off an Ironman in June, mm-hmm. and the New York City Marathon just this previous weekend.
Which was a beautiful day, 55 and overcast. Who could ask for more?
So you get to practice on your own self as a laboratory, which which is my modus operandi as well. but I don't have the science. I just have the tribal wisdom. One of the things that, you know, yoga is one of those things that has a, and I've talked to people about this before, is a very general term with a lot of specific disciplines and meanings. What's your discipline and meaning, or your take on it?
Well, as the style of yoga I teach, everybody always says, what's your style? And they're wondering if I teach Ashtanga yoga or Anusara yoga or Iyengar yoga or Raja yoga. I just like to say I teach yoga as we do it here in America, which is generally Hatha yoga. But I do some flow and a lot of focus on core strength and hip and hamstring openers. As you say, it's pretty much what I have. This sounds very yogic, but what I've channeled through my body, what I've learned in practice, works for me and complements my running and helps to make me more strong, more flexible, more focused as a runner and just as a person.
And it keeps you from getting injured, do you think?
It's helped a ton, in conjunction with the things that I'm always learning as a coach. But a lot of the exercises that, say, a physical therapist would use correctively have their corresponding yoga postures, so I'm able to line up and say, I had some plantar fasciitis and realized that it was coming from an incorrect activation of my gluteus medius muscles. I see what the PT would have me do for that, and I can just incorporate some yoga moves to fix the problem.
Okay. So what have you had to work through injuries yourself?
I have. As anybody who puts in any time at all on their feet does, and as most of us, I think, are probably type A, and we like to push the limits a little bit. But yoga's really good at teaching you when how to listen to your body and when you really ought to pay attention to those first whispers of an injury. Sometimes you can kind of cut them off at the pass and avoid letting them grow into full-blown injuries. But yoga itself sometimes brings people into injury, too. So it's always a process of learning where your limits are, trying not to push too far on either side of them so you can hit your full potential.
I guess in the general sense, running is yoga for me because it's my way of exploring my mind-body connection and listening to what my body's saying, right?
Exactly.
So in the general sense. But in the specific sense, you know, we all have hot spots. We all have weak spots. And after you've been doing it for a few years, you know where those are and you know the warning signs.
Mm-hmm.
There's if you look at the top things that runners are going to have as problems, they're going to be Achilles problems, they're going to be hamstring problems, they're going to be, you know, knee tendonitis of some sort, they're going to be, you know, plantar fasciitis, hip problems. What are some of the, you know, if I've only got 20 minutes to stretch in a day or to do yoga in a day, what do you recommend?
Well, there are two ways to approach the list of problems that you just named, and one is by checking hip and core strength, and then the other one is to bring any imbalances in the body into balance, and that usually means hip flexibility. It can sometimes mean working on the lower legs, especially the calf muscles, but usually it's hip flexibility. So if you have 10, 20 minutes doing some yoga-based core moves, I'm thinking plank pose, any of the standing balance poses, which not only work your core, they work your balance, they work your proprioception, and they strengthen your lower legs, which is always good. And then some lunges, stretches for the hips, especially the hip flexors. So often, as runners, we think, oh, my hamstrings are tight. And that's not always the problem. Often we spend more time sitting in chairs than we do out running.
Yep.
Despite our best intentions, and that means that our hamstrings actually get overstretched and our hip flexors get too tight. So often we're focusing on the wrong area. We're trying to stretch the back of the leg when in fact we need to stretch the front.
So what would you recommend for that? You said lunges and that sort of thing.
Lunging, and I'm not talking about, you know, a weightlifting move, but coming into a nice low lunge where you've got your back knee down and your front leg shin perpendicular to the floor and your hips squared in the direction that you're facing, get there and hang out for a little while. Sometimes we call that runner's lunge. Sometimes we call runner's lunge the pose where you shift your hips back and stretch your hamstring. But the two of those together are going to work to balance between front and back in that split leg stance, which is really just the running stance. It's working to bring you flexibility through the range of motion that you're going to need for running. And if you do that on one side and then on the other side, you might notice, I really do feel it more, say, in the front of my hip than in my hamstring. And that would be a cue that maybe it's hip flexors that actually need to be addressed. Or alternatively, you might feel it more in the back, in the back of the thigh, and that might actually be a sign that your hamstrings are tight. So lunges like that are really efficient for helping you bring the body into balance around the hips.
Yeah, it's interesting because a lot of people think when they have injuries or pains like this, they think of it as a point, and it's really a system. And the part that hurts a lot of times isn't the part that's the problem.
So true. And you mentioned knee problems. The knee problems can come from above or from below. And often they're an expression of something that's going on at the hip that just is affecting at the knee, because the knee is simply a hinge joint. You know, it should just go open and shut. But if something is tugging at the hip, it starts to wear on one side of the hinge.
Yeah.
Or it could be a problem coming from below, choice of footwear, dead shoes, some kind of critical instability in the feet. And yoga helps with that, too. So if we look at the hips and we look at the feet, we can usually fix the knees along the way. So you're totally right. Sometimes you're having this injury expressed somewhere that doesn't really have to do with the root cause.
Right. So I see a lot of people will try to mechanically try to fix it with some sort of fix to the shoe, or, you know, wear a strut or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably the wrong solution, because eventually in the long run, that's not going to help you.
Exactly.
Yeah, you got to figure out what it is. A lot of times it's mechanics, too.
It's not
physiological in the sense that something's wrong with your body. It's just the way you're hitting the ground with your body. Because there's so much force. You only have to be off by a little bit in your alignment, and you'll cause something to break. Because you're looking at, what, 1,600 pounds or something when you hit the ground?
Depending on how much you weigh, right? Somewhere between 3 and 5 times your body weight with every step.
Right. Well, for me, that would be a lot. Here's the other challenge that you run into every day, because this is the same challenge I run into, which is, you know, I listen to and I read all these articles about exercises I should be doing, and I know I should be doing, and I know I'd feel much better if I could, you know, do all these exercises and all this stretching, but I just don't have time to do it, you know, and I know my limits, and I know there's a tipping point where if I load in too much, I'm going to get frustrated with it and not do anything anymore, right? So, I mean, how do you deal with that?
Well, I think if you can chunk it up into little pieces and not feel like, sometimes when people think of yoga, they think of a studio class that lasts 90 minutes. And you can include yoga in your routine without needing to devote that much time every day. It's useful to do it periodically so you can have a teacher check your form and make sure that you're not going to be doing damage to your body by practicing with bad alignment. But to do 10 minutes a day, as you say, there sometimes can be a tipping point, but you can include that right after your run when you're already warm, and that way you can bypass having to ease into the poses quite as much. You won't need a built-in warm-up. You'll already be warm from your run. And, you know, just a couple minutes of plank poses, a couple minutes of hip stretches makes a huge difference. And once you see the difference that it makes, it becomes cyclical. I'm thinking of the image of the snowball. Like, it kind of, well, it snowballs. It becomes something that you want to do, and you kind of crave it. Okay, now I got to get the release that I get from stretching, or now I want to feel that pleasant fatigue from my core move. So 10 minutes after a run can really help a whole lot.
Sure, because I've boiled it down to basically I'm stretching my Achilles, which is a problem spot for me, and I'm stretching my hamstrings, and that's
right.
It, because that's what I got time to do. So, you know, doing some sort of plank that also address those same points would be good for me. But I also realize as I'm getting older, and this is another question, so, you know, as you get older, you're losing your flexibility. But
right.
You don't have to lose that flexibility.
No, not at all. And as we age also, our sense of balance can be skewed a little bit. So yoga is really good at helping folks maintain flexibility and balance through the years.
So what would be the practical advice for someone like me who's a mediocre marathoner?
Well, if you could only do 5 minutes of yoga after your runs, Chris, I tell you to do plank pose on your hands and then push up into downward facing dog, which is going to stretch all the way down the backs of your legs, the areas that you said you'd like to stretch after your run. And then if you want to build from there, you could drop down to your elbows. So you're in an arrowhead plank, which is really good for targeting the core a little bit more, taking the work of the plank out of the chest and putting it more into the shoulder stabilizers. And then you can push from there into dolphin pose, which is a more intense stretch for the back of the body and also for the front of the chest. So right there, 5 minutes, a plank to down dog, you go back and forth a couple times, arrowhead plank to dolphin, we got you fixed.
Yeah, that would be very challenging for me because I am so tight in my hamstrings.
So you start slowly and you keep your knees bent, and maybe you hook up with a local teacher who can watch you and make sure that you're practicing in a way that's going to be safe for your body.
Right, right. And you got to also, that's the other thing with all stretching and this sort of exercise, is you got to be careful you're not bending your back when you're doing it.
Exactly. You don't want it to exacerbate the problems. You want it to alleviate the problems.
Yep. And just a little bit adds up over time. So if you can do a little bit every day, it adds up.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you run into out there with, what are your most common misperceptions that you run into dealing with athletes?
Oh, everybody thinks, you know, yoga's going to be a lot of chanting and incense, and it can be, and that can be great, but that maybe is not the entry point for most people. Also, folks aren't sure, and I know this because I wasn't sure when I got into yoga exactly how it was going to fit with training. So what's too much? What's the right class name to go to? How long do I need to practice to see benefits? And all these questions I answer in my book, The Athlete's Guide to Yoga. And I also show how yoga can be periodized, just like your athletic training, so that it complements the training instead of wearing you down.
Oh, that's interesting. So you actually put the cycles in, so the cycles are complementary to your training cycles.
Exactly right. So in off-season, in the base period, that's when folks can do more of a power yoga practice or get into yoga, because it's not going to wear you out when you're close to your peak competition. But then the closer that you get to your goal race, the more mellow your yoga needs to be. But then it can just preserve the gains that you've already made, and it can also become a part of your mental training and help you with your focus and your presence.
So by getting that quiet time to sort of center and connect with your body.
Exactly, and then once you get good at that, you're doing it on the fly. So you said for you, sometimes your yoga is your running, because it gives you time to make the mind-body connection, and you can certainly be doing a meditation in motion out there on the trails with your dog.
Absolutely.
Being in the moment, every step, and you have to be on the trails or else you fall down.
Well, right now I have to be very in the moment because there's 2 inches of crunchy leaves on all the trails. So
yeah, it's a great focusing tool, absolutely.
That's good for your balance, good for your lateral strength. But you got to be ready for if you find that odd baseball-sized round rock hidden under the leaves. You got to be ready to hit the ground.
It teaches you, as we would say in yoga, that change is the constant.
Yeah, because it's better to be covered with mud than to break your ankle.
Exactly.
I've learned that the hard way.
Oh.
So that's the other thing that you probably run into is a lot of people who have done serious injury to themselves and now are struggling with a way to come back to their sport.
Mm-hmm.
And to figure a way to rebuild their body in a new and different, stronger way so
mm-hmm.
they can get back into it. I mean, for example, like I said, I rolled my ankle and pulled the tendon off the top of the ankle and pulled a little bit of bone out, you know, the avulsion, the typical bad sprain break. You know, I had to relearn all my balance
mm-hmm.
because that tendon was longer when it healed.
Mm-hmm.
After 40-some-odd years, I had to learn how to not walk into walls, you know?
Yeah.
So do you run into that with athletes?
I do. A lot of times folks come to yoga when they're injured to the point where they can't engage in their primary activity anymore. And if that's how we get them to try it, well, that's fine. We do need to modify. So if your listeners have an injury like that and are kind of sidelined and are thinking of how am I going to spend my energy, they need to go to a teacher who's experienced and knows how to modify for them and who will encourage them to do what's best given their particular circumstances. And that might mean, in the case of somebody with an avulsion in the talus, that they need to actually do the poses only on one side for now and envision doing them on the other side later, or practice the same poses on their backs instead. So it could take a lot of modification, but it can be really useful, because along the way, in yoga class, you start to learn a lot about yourself and your needs and desires as an athlete, and you get a realistic perspective on them, too. So it can be a really, really good activity to engage in when you're injured.
How so? Because it forces some sort of introspection?
Exactly right. Yep. Yep, and you get to see how you are impatient or patient about how you maybe are competitive on more levels than you expected. You know, are you appreciating simply aesthetically the poses that the teacher's demonstrating, or the 18-year-old ballerina on the mat next to you can do, or are you feeling jealous? And it gives you time to kind of be with that mental process that we all go through when we are injured.
For the triathletes, what's the difference in the triathletes you treat versus the endurance athletes, the runners that you treat?
Triathletes are already going to be doing a decent amount of running. The difference is that they spend a lot more time folded over on the bike. And especially on a triathlon bike, the position is pretty aggressive. It puts a lot of demand on the hamstrings and on the lower back, more than a road bike setup would. So those folks need more passive backbending. Not necessarily more active backbending, although that can be really useful, but they're going to have all of the runner's classic problems that I was describing with the hip flexors magnified, plus a lot of strain on the lower back, plus a lot of closing off in the front of the chest. So if we can get them into more openness along the front of the body, then they do great, and it helps to improve their swimming as well. But generally, they're just an intensification of what we see in runners.
The pool miles don't help them with some of their flexibility in their upper body and some of their core strength?
Unfortunately, no, not usually. Maybe if they came to the sport from a swimming background, because those folks are generally a little bit looser, although swimmers have their own issues with chest tightness and hip over flexibility sometimes.
Yeah, and ankle over flexibility too.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Being a runner, that whole swimming thing is a mechanical nightmare for me.
One night in class, I had a very good NCAA record holder swimmer lying next to a really good post-collegiate runner in the final pose, corpse pose, where you're just lying there. And I was looking at their ankles, and my swimmer had her legs so relaxed and externally rotated that her pinky toes were on the ground as she laid on her back, and my runner's feet were pointing straight up to the ceiling.
Exactly.
You can see who does what sport right there, even after yoga class when they're feeling looser than usual.
Yeah, that would be the anchors we have to drag along behind us. Okay, Sage, so what do you want to leave our listeners with here as your parting words of wisdom?
Well, I'd say you can think outside the studio. Don't feel like you have to be doing 3 90-minute classes a week. If you can do one, that's great. If you can do one a month, that's great. But bring your yoga home, because that's where the real work happens, is when you're really listening to your body and thinking, what would feel good for me right now? And the other thing that I teach my students is to focus on form and breath. And that's what yoga is, where we're thinking, how am I going to put my body into this shape, take this form, and then how am I going to breathe here as comfortably and fully as I can? And sometimes that's really easy when you're just lying on your back. You can breathe just fine, but when you're balancing or in a handstand, sometimes it's a lot tougher to breathe. So if you can learn to come into the most economical form you can, and to breathe as fully as you can, then not only are you doing yoga, you're probably gaining a lot of endurance, and you'll be able to run longer and farther. So form and breath works as a great mantra for running. So
it
you just want to relax your form and make sure you're breathing.
Yeah, and also that's an excellent tip for people when they're out in a run and they're starting to get challenged by fatigue, is to open up your breathing and focus on running tall and expanding that breathing. That's a great way to change states, as they say.
Beautiful.
So give us all your stuff so people can find you.
Well, you can find everything on my website. It's sageroundtree.com. My last name actually doesn't have a D in it, even though it sounds like it would, but you can type the D mistakenly and still get to me. And I have links to my podcast, which is I think about 15 or 16 short segments. Free. You can download it on iTunes or you can stream it on YouTube. I have 2 books, as you mentioned, The Athlete's Guide to Yoga, which is my magnum opus, the treatise that describes all the various poses and how they could be periodized and fit together in an athlete's annual training plan. And then the little book is called The Athlete's Pocket Guide to Yoga, and it's got 50 routines. It's spiral bound, so it lies flat. You can have it on your coffee table or on the floor for your 10 minutes of yoga practice after you run. And then there also is a DVD called The Athlete's Guide to Yoga that's produced by Endurance Films, and that has 20 segments that you can arrange in any order you like. It's already got 3 pre-built routines that fit with the runner's base period and build period and peak period, but you can also go in there and say, I just want to do this core and this hips routine, or I just want to do breathing and relaxation, and you can program it and have the DVD spit all those segments back out in the sequence you want them.
Awesome. All right. Well, thanks for your time, and I love it when you speak Latin.
Thank you.
All right. Well, enjoy your weekend.
Thanks, Chris. Same to you.
And thanks for your time. It seems like you really know what you're talking about here, Sage.
I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, good luck. If you need anything, you let me know, and we'll stay in touch.
All right.
All right? Bye-bye.
Take care. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
that dreams come true. And who would have thought I'd end up with you? And who would have thought what they said was true? But it wasn't you all. Light and darkness come through. Parties backing up against the sky. Echo Park sunset and endless drives by. Well, someone went down and I wonder who. Faces that's full, really anybody I know. So I drink like a fish and I crawl like a rat.
Just ran the Atlantic City Marathon. Had a very good race, solid race. Ran my race, and I ran my even pace race, and hung in there, just like I thought. It was, you know, no support, nobody there. if you were used to running Disneyland, this isn't a race for you, because it was pretty lean. So things like, you know, no mile markers, or actually mile markers, but you couldn't really tell what they meant, and they didn't line up with your times, that sort of thing. So I ran my race, and I ran even splits the whole way. I was about a minute up on my pace, not a minute up. I was targeting at a 3:28 pace, and I was running about a 3:29 pace. You know, I was running like 7:45, 7:50s, right through the half. Had a little power failure around 17, 18, but I ran through it. Took a little walk, gave back because I picked it up a little bit, like 12 through 14. So I was actually a couple minutes up, I think. Like I said, the mile markers are hard to figure out. I had a little power failure. I did a couple of strategic walks, not because I had to, because I wanted to. Got my nutrition down real well. Drank a lot of Gatorade. Ate a bunch of chocolate number nines. Bunch of Enduralite, so that wasn't the issue, and held my pace. And then it was like a triple loop course, so you went out and back, out and back, out and back on the boardwalk and these roads, so you get to see the same people like six times. But coming in, I said, if I can make it back to the boardwalk, because it goes off the boardwalk onto a road section, then you get back on the boardwalk around the 22 mile mark. I said, if I can make it back to the boardwalk, I can gut it in. And I got back to the boardwalk and I stretched out my pace and I gutted it in, but I just didn't have those 3 8-minute miles in me. Unfortunately, I had 3 8:30s in me, so I lost a couple minutes there, and that put me over the edge, and I ran a 3:32. But I definitely held my pace. I wasn't doing the death march. I was working it, and I gave it everything I had. And I feel it was an honest race, and I feel pretty good about it.
I'm not doing it. I never even heard this. I don't even know who I'm
in. This is a cartoon when I was a kid.
Oh, so it's an old-ass cartoon.
This is the Underdog Show.
I've never seen it, and I don't want to sing the theme song that I don't know.
You go, ba-ooh,
okay, you try to get me to go, ba-ooh, ba-ooh.
You ever heard Simon Bar Sinister?
No.
No? When in this world the headlines read of those whose hearts are filled with greed, who rob and steal from those who need to right this wrong with blinding speed, comes Underdog. Come on, your turn.
Underdog.
Underdog. Speed of lightning, power of thunder, riding rubber, rubber.
You really didn't know the words.
It was 30 years ago. I don't have to know all the words.
I know all the words to the Pokemon theme song, and that was like 10 years ago.
Thanks for joining me on another running adventure. That puts episode 96 in the can, as well as my 28th marathon. 28th marathon attempted, anyhow. I feel healthy and strong. Hope you guys do, too. I have to figure out what my next adventure is. Got any suggestions? I'm open. Thank you, everyone, for the emails and the tweets. It's great to meet everyone, and it makes me feel connected. So I'll answer your emails, but I can't promise a useful answer. Next week, we get the inimitable Dr. Monty to talk about the secrets to a long, healthy life. He gives a great talk. You don't want to miss this one. It's going to be a good one. Episode 97. Still looking for input for my 100th episode. Shoot me a brief recording with some advice and we'll stick it in, make everybody happy. I've been fairly hard-pressed at my job for the last couple of weeks. And in fact, I heard one of the people who works for me say, "I hate my job." And it reminded me of a story that Stephen Covey tells of a man who came up to him after a workshop and said, Steven, I don't love my wife anymore. What should I do? And Covey responded with, you need to love your wife. And the guy was all confused, and he didn't understand. He said, but I don't love my wife. And Stephen went on to make his point that love is an action. It's a verb. It's not a state of being. So think about that. And so I say the same to you. You know, you're going to have to actively love your job and love your life and love your sports sometimes. It doesn't just happen. You have to make it into an action. And make it your decision and act upon it with a force and positive action. And you may find that you do love your job and your life and your sports and your wife and everything else in this world. People are watching you, and people are depending on you. And they're watching you swim upstream in the face of the current that is our world sometimes. But that very act of swimming hard against the insurmountable tide will free you. In the very real sense, your attitude and your work will set you free. And when you find yourself free, look around for me, swimming too, and I'll see you out there. Music tonight is from the PodSafe Music Network and is a happy little ditty by Daniel Adam Johnson called Let's Watch the World. And there's a great line in this where he says, I dream in color. Happy Thanksgiving.
Tell you how I feel. Since that first kiss on my world, I dream in color. You can see it in my walk. It's written in the skies with dreams from heaven. Tell me desire. I need to know every last one. I am the one that's going to see you dream them. Give me your hand. I've a surprise you can't refuse. Let's watch the world spin wildly all around. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the Run Run Live podcast. Comments and suggestions can be made on our listener comment line at 206-339-7804 or via email at chrisrunner@runrunlive.com. That's our website. Go to the website, check it out for articles and my blog and other great stuff. If you would like to be on the show or have a suggestion as someone you would like me to have on the show, drop me a line and I will see you out there.
Run, run, live. The podcast for all your running needs.